You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Phillies are in the desert, up 2-0 against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Jeff Mosher, is this how you planned it?
Absolutely how I drew it up, Frank. Get perfect pitching, basically perfect pitching, and you get a team slugging percentage. I think that right now is over 550, something ridiculous like that. You're going to win a lot of games that way. Get some really good bullpen outs, too. I mean, there's a really good marriage going on between everything that the Phillies are doing. There's no one area, sort of underrated is how good they've been defensively. Bohm, Trey Turner, since that loss against the Braves. Rojas, of course, in center field. Been really good defensively. It's hard to find an area right now where you say, I wish the Phillies would do it. Maybe a couple of walks out of the bullpen that give you a little agita in the late innings, but that's it.
So let's talk about a lot of these different things. I mean, bullpen. I mean, Sir Anthony is all over the place. I mean, that's the only thing I can point to. And you know, he might get a clean inning, but that's because we saw the Braves get themselves out. But I think we saw Rob Thompson do the quick hook lately, and you know, let Alvarado clean up the mess. but other than that, I really don't have much to complain about here as the Phillies go. 2-0 at home. I'm still kind of in shock just how overmatched the Diamondbacks looked. Now, I thought the Phillies had the edge. Now, of course, the first two games were supposed to be the difficult ones because the Diamondbacks were throwing up their two really good starters in Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly, and they were no match for this Phillies team.
No, I had a feeling. Do you remember what we talked about in the preview podcast this series? Guys, the left-handers, specifically Schwarber, probably being really happy to see right-handed pitching that doesn't throw like Strider. You know, I mean, clearly Schwarber was guessing. He was trying to catch up to 100 miles per hour. The ball's coming in on his hand. Strider had him bottled up. And same thing with Stott, who I think was the only guy to swing at the changeup or the only guy to see a changeup from Strider. But then once. And not that Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen are bad, but they're not throwing 99-101 at you. And I had a feeling that was going to wake Schwarber up a little bit. And, and the second part of that is those Arizona Diamondbacks pitchers really did leave some balls right down Broadway for those guys to pounce on. So that didn't help their case. But I felt like the lefties, especially Schwarber, Harper, they were just licking their chops to face right-handed pitching that wasn't throwing 100 miles per hour, and you couldn't make a mistake against them, and those pitchers did. They left too much up, and they paid the price for it.
The Diamondbacks offense also usually pretty good, but been they've been literally silent in game two, but overall pretty darn silent so far.
Yeah, the Phillies are doing to the Diamondbacks what the Diamondbacks sort of did to the Dodgers, right? Which is like pounce on the starting pitching. Any mistake they make, take it out of the ballpark, manufacture some runs, which the Phillies are actually doing a little bit of when they're not hitting solo home runs. You know, I thought the two things about the Diamondbacks. I thought, A, they had to steal one with one of their two aces going. They didn't. B, I thought they were going to have to be an active team on the base paths to win this game. And it really started in game one. Didn't Corbin Carroll lead off the first with a single or a walk or something?
Yes.
He got on base.
Yeah, he got on base right? to start the whole thing.
But he didn't do anything. He sort of just sat there, which is sort of not what got the Diamondbacks to where they are. I mean, they're an aggressive team. They play young. They play they're supposed to be not scared, but it seemed like they got into this moment and they didn't do what you thought that they would do. Well, you know, the pitchers left balls high and their base runners have not been that aggressive. The one guy who scares the crap out of me is Ketel Marte, and he actually has had some hits, but he's up with nobody on base a lot of times. So when he gets his hits, he gets on base, and the Phillies have regulated the damage there.
So how much of this is this home crowd just being intimidating? I've heard a lot nationally talking about the Phillies fans. It's all been like super positive, you know, to even draw comparisons between Citizens Bank Park noise and the Venezuela World Baseball Classic game in the Dome in Miami for volume. Every other team that's still in the playoffs is in a dome and they're not being mentioned, but everybody's talking about the Phillies fans and it's all positive.
Yeah. Aren't you actually concerned that when they go out there to the Diamondbacks, who probably aren't going to sell out and where you can get tickets for like $12, I'm a little concerned that the juice is not going to be there because the Phillies are going to be bored.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Atlanta crowd makes a little noise, Frank.
Since you brought it up, and I was planning on talking about this. So as of us recording this on Tuesday morning, there's still plenty of tickets available on SeatGeek for the Phillies and Diamondbacks. $15 a pop. The last night they were as low as $5 each. I'm like embarrassed for the Diamondback. Like, this is going to be all Phillies fans. A lot of Phillies fans are just like, oh, what the hell? I'm just going to fly out there and go to this damn game. There's going to be some noise there, Jeff.
Yeah. Sometimes you feel like sometimes towns don't deserve championship level teams or good teams. And, you know, this is one of those examples where, like, what else? Even the Rays fan who has had, they have an excuse. It's really hard to get to that stadium. They built it in a terrible spot. But in the playoffs,
it's the worst stadium ever.
It is the worst stadium ever. In the playoffs, you'll see them come out a little bit and show. This is kind of embarrassing for the Diamondbacks. And, you know, I don't know. I know they didn't expect their team to be here, but my God, that's part of the fun when you don't expect your team to be this far and they're far. That's what you rally around. And I'm serious about the Phillies' ability to sort of, I'm sure they'll be up for the game. And you know, again, Diamondback pitching from here on out, if they get back to Gallen, is pretty shaky, right? They're starting Fat, who I don't even know much about, and then they may have to have a bullpen game in game four.
That's already been announced.
So, yeah. So I mean, everything lines up pretty well here for the Phillies, but I think it's going to be culture shock for them to be in a stadium where the fans are like, hey, this is all right, you know?
But I'm like embarrassed for them, though. It's like they saw game two, and then they're like, nope, I'm not going. Literally the ticket prices dropped so dramatically after game two and where the Phillies embarrassed. I guess they embarrassed the fans and the fans are just like, I'm not going to show up. So I feel like the noise is going to be for the Phillies fans out there.
Yeah, well, let me remind our listeners, some of who may be younger and don't remember this. When the Diamondbacks became a franchise, they were one of the last. I think they were among the last expansion teams into the league.
Yeah, the Rays and the Diamondbacks were the last.
Rays and Diamondbacks, right? When they entered the league, they tried to sort of fast track their growing process and they signed up, you know, they got Randy Johnson and they made it to the World Series and they beat the Yankees. I have a friend who passed away and he's a huge Giants fan, San Francisco Giants fan. And he hated the Diamondbacks, not because he saw them as a threat, but he remembered that the Diamondbacks went broke trying to put this all-star team assembled, you know, that actually did well. They went broke and had to borrow money from the rest of Major League Baseball to stay afloat. And that's what enabled them to get to the World Series. And he always held that against them. He used to call them the Filthy Snakes franchise. So, you know, I'd like to think he'd be pretty happy right now that they're getting embarrassed on the national scene in the playoffs. But that team has struggled to draw and generate, like, you know, sort of the way the Rays have at times. But you say that it's embarrassing for them, and it is, but their whole history is sort of filled with kind of not being able to be the really catchy thing in Arizona sports.
I forgot all about that. So when Ken Kendrick took over the team, he started paying back the debt as part of the deal. Yeah. But Bernard Gilkey, remember him? He got paid the way until 2017. He got, not as bad as Bonds, but they owed him money for a long time as part of settling that debt. So
yeah, Bonilla, right? You said Bonds. I think you meant Bonilla.
I mean Bobby Bonilla. Excuse me. Yes, yeah. Of course, Bobby Bonilla. Jeez, I guess you're talking Giants threw me off. But yeah, but like Bernard Gilkey got paid all. Who I remember as a Cardinal more than anything, right? But he ended up playing with the Diamondbacks, and they had to spread out his pay.
I remember him as a
time.
Met, Frank. He had a great 1 year. I think he was the Mets' only All-Star in like 94 or something when the Mets were really terrible in the 90s, but throwing money at a lot of people. yeah, you're right. He came up with the Cardinals mostly. Yeah, most success. The M1 Mets.
Yeah, so anyway... Yeah, that was the original owner spent the money on the likes of Jay Bell and paid Jay Bell way too much money. And
I remember that.
But, you know, I think the fans out there now, if fans are familiar with, you mentioned the Tampa Bay area, a lot of us are familiar with the Tampa Bay area, thanks to spring training and whatnot. But I think Phoenix is not unlike Tampa in that they have a lot of people that work for companies that move there, and so they're from somewhere else. So I don't think there's been a generation yet to really be behind the team. But still, like if they're in your town, I have a buddy from college who lives out there now, and I'm sure he will be there. I haven't talked to him lately. I'm sure he'll be there. He's the company he works for sent him out there. That's how a lot of people are going there, and why it's becoming such a big market. But it really is a market size that eclipses Philadelphia. So there's really no excuse for their fans doing this to the baseball team.
No, I agree with you. I mean, again, the fact that they can't rally around a team that wasn't supposed to be there and has one of the most exciting players in baseball in Corbin Carroll, young players in baseball who had a hell of a rookie year.
That'd be rookie of the year.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's a really good player, and it's a shame that he's going to be probably on the Yankees in 5 years or something like that, because this is what the Diamondbacks are, right? I mean, they're a flash in the pan organization. Sometimes it comes together, and then they wind up, their talent leaves because they have to go trade guys to get pitching or something like that.
Yeah. So,
you know, Goldschmidt, right? He was a Diamondback. Got traded. Arenado, was he a Diamondback?
No, he was a Rocky.
No, he was a Rocky. I'm sorry, because that's a similar thing there. But yeah, you can go look throughout the league and find some pretty good Diamondbacks who then went on and succeeded elsewhere.
It's funny. Beginning of the year, and even in the last couple trade deadlines, you expected the Diamondbacks to sell off some of their pieces. So among the players I advocated the Phillies trading for are Christian Walker, you know, when Hoskins went down, and Merrill Kelly the last couple trade deadlines because he's a nice pitcher, would do very nicely on another team. So I just can't believe, one, that there's this many tickets available, and two, how cheap they are. And it just boggles the mind that, especially since game two, they've just poof given up on their team. Now let's talk about other embarrassing things too. I didn't know if I should be embarrassed for the Diamondbacks, but who subs out players in the NLCS, Jeff?
great point.
But I didn't know if Rob Thompson was doing the right thing, doing the wrong thing, sending Edmundo Sosa and Jake Cave up there to hit. Of course, Jake Cave hits a double. I'm is that kicking them when they're down, or is it the right thing to do not to run up the score? I couldn't figure out which.
Oh, no, no, I don't think it was either of that. It was like, let me, you know, we got this game in the bag. Let me just not overwork. You know, I had actually thought Stott, he went from first to second, and you saw him sort of grab the bat back of his thigh area, and I got really nervous. I thought maybe he tweaked a hammy, right? So, and in that moment, I was thinking, man, you know, Phillies go up a few runs here. Maybe it is okay to start. So you're right. You almost never see that in a playoff game, but the way the Phillies were hitting the ball and the way their bullpen had been, and you know, the Diamondback lineup, again, like the Braves lineup is a better lineup than the Diamondback lineup, but yeah. So once you got up to, you know, was it 5-0? No, that was game. I'm thinking game one.
Game one, they up to 5, and then they let them back in with a couple of runs. So.
Right. Once they got to at the end of the 6th, and it's 6-0, then they got 4 more in the 7th. Yeah, I thought that was the right thing to do. Actually, I'm a little worried about Harper. We're seeing that whole wear and tear impact of him playing first base. He's had to stretch. He's had to dive. He made some really nice defensive plays too. And I'm thinking, all right, we can get him out now, right?
Yeah, so I didn't know how I felt about that. I just thought maybe it was they should have just gone about their business and not drawn attention to the fact that they were smacking the Diamondbacks around so well.
Topper did that to rub it in, or
no? I don't think so, but I didn't know if they would take it that way. I mean, it certainly the fans took it that way if they don't want to watch them anymore. But I did look it up. The 1996 NLCS, the Braves actually won two different games. One was 15-0. One was 14-0. So it was not the biggest shutout in the NLCS, but still a very, very convincing victory, I would say, going forward. All right, so let's break down then the pitching going forward. Phillies have cool as a cucumber Ranger Suarez for game 3 today, and the Diamondbacks have Brandon Pfaadt, who pitched a total of 7 innings the last round. I think this is where I had the Phillies beating the Diamondbacks, and I thought if the Phillies could take the first two, they have a real shot at a sweep here, because Pfaadt just kind of okay this regular season, had to be sent to AAA. They don't have anybody else, which is unfortunate, and so there's going to be a bullpen game and on game 4. I mean, that to me, even if the Phillies are throwing up Taijuan Walker, who hasn't pitched in a while and struggled a little bit at times, I think this overwhelmingly favors the Phillies.
Is that definite, Taijuan Walker over
Taijuan Sanchez? Walker, yep.
Okay. I find that to be interesting. And by the way, to your point about like who substitutes players, right, in playoff games, how many times do you see back-to-back playoff series where the team sort of has to go into game 3, not 4 or 5, game 3, sort of saying, remember against the Braves, Snitker didn't know who he wanted to pitch. Do I pitch Bryce Elder? Do I pitch the kid Smith Shaver? I'll go with Elder. Like, who does that in the playoffs? And here the Phillies are fortunate enough to have a second straight team saying, like, I guess we got to go with Brandon Pfaadt here because we really don't have anything better. I mean, that kind of tells you about the state of pitching in general in major leagues. But while we focus on offense, right, all the home runs and Schwarber and Harper, I mean, what you're getting from Nola, what you're getting from Wheeler, and to have Suarez, who's not great but really good, he becomes great. He becomes such an asset as your third pitcher because you're looking around at all these other teams and they can't even find a number 3. You know, the Astros can because they're deep in pitching. But the Rangers had to throw out, you know, just to use an example, the Texas Rangers had to throw out Max Scherzer, who ordinarily would be a great number 3, but he's coming off an injury that Verlander also had. Verlander wasn't right when he came off that injury. Scherzer is coming off the same injury. They had to throw him out. They had no other choice. He got beat up.
Yeah, I heard this nationally. A lot of people were saying that the Phillies, of all the playoff teams, had the best 1-2-3, and mainly because, well, one, of course, Wheeler and Nola, but two, nobody else has a number 3. I mean, Scherzer, you know, after not pitching, after being on the IL, you kind of almost expected he would struggle last night against the Astros, and ends up giving up 5 runs and doesn't go deep at all. So, you know, I think this is a Ranger Suarez as the number 3. My gosh, I know some people were nervous given his injury, but man, he's the best one out there.
It's and probably by a mile. That's the crazy part about it. And the thing is, Nola and Wheeler are clearly the best 1-2 combo right now in the playoffs. And if you want to say Suarez 1-2-3, and how many Cy Youngs among all of them?
Yeah.
Right? Zero Cy Young award. They're as steady as they get. They can be dominant, but none of them are considered a top five pitcher in the game, I don't think. You know, that's because Wheeler and Nola both get off to really bad April and Mays, but you would call them top five October pitchers now. And Nola, not so much in his career, but all of a sudden he's become that. So, and even the Astros, with all the pitching they have, you know, Verlander's done a nice job coming back for them, and Framber's had a good year, Framber Valdez. Christian Javier is not the guy that we saw last year combining, you know, to be the starter of a no-hitter.
Yeah, really. So, yeah.
I mean, Nate Eovaldi has been fantastic, but he's not a top five pitcher either. So it's a very odd set of teams left here. But clearly, when you have Nola, Wheeler, and Suarez, I think that gives them the advantage over almost any team that's out there right now. So long as they pitch this way.
Is it too presumptuous to think that the Phillies are just going to take games 3 and 4? I mean, I just feel like this heavily favors the Phillies. I'm not trying to be a homer. I'm not trying to like be over the top, but I just have a hard time seeing this going five.
I've been trying to avoid that line of thinking, but it is really, really difficult. Now, listen, game four, you're saying, like, you know, Taiwan Walker versus a bullpen. Now, a bullpen's a great advantage game for the Phillies, right? They're facing a bullpen, and it's not like the Arizona bullpen is great, by the way, either. So that's an advantage. But, you know, Taiwan Walker hasn't pitched in quite a while, and he didn't end the season on the greatest note either. So could that be one of those 11-9 games that the Diamondbacks pull out? Maybe. We'll see. But I sort of think that depends on what happens in tonight in game three. I mean, if you get 3-0 on the Diamondbacks, they don't have a great home crowd to rally them. They're a young team. You might just be sending them home, honestly. They might be like, you know what? We were awesome. No one expected us to be here. We're down 3-0. We got a lot of golf to play. Let's get there, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, they often say that, and we saw this even with the 2007 Phillies. It was like, yeah, we made the playoffs. And then it was like, oh, yep. after the Rockies just sort of steamrolled them over.
Yeah.
And then they came back fighting in a different way in 2008, because by 2008, they're like, damn it, I ain't going home.
Right.
And right. I see that in this Phillies team this year, you know, that they're like, I'm not going home. Like, they're like, I didn't come this far just to lose now. So I see that in this team, like I saw in the 2008 team, that's something the Diamondbacks haven't gotten yet, because they just haven't been here.
No, I love that. And you know what I've been thinking about, this Phillies team sort of reminds me a little bit, maybe it's too much of an obvious parallel, but of the 2015 Royals team. You know, they lost in 2014 in the World Series to the Giants. Bochy. By the way, the longer Bochy is around in this playoff series, the more nervous I get. But that's for a later date. But yeah, they lose. I think that was the series where Bumgarner won two games and then closed out.
Yeah, and then they gave him a win for that too, I think, even though it could have technically been a save.
Right. So they lose, and the Royals had good talent. They had some veterans. They wanted to win. You know, they came back the next year. They were back in the World Series, and they finished the job against the Mets.
Yeah, Bumgarner, technically a member of the 2023 Diamondbacks. He was pitching for them in their rotation to start the year, believe it or not. And
is he hurt? Where is he?
They released him. He didn't have anything left. Yeah, he got released. I was surprised that the Diamondbacks released him, because it signaled to me they were serious. You know, I think when they signed him, they're like, okay, this will be a veteran arm to eat a bunch of innings, and we'll just, you know, it'll get us through. But hey, they pivoted and said, you know what, we're going to try to win. So I give them some credit. It's not a podcast. I can't remember which one. Might have been with my buddy Matt Rogers, who asked me early on, like, okay, well, who has the better chance of sticking around of some of these playoff teams that are involved? And I did say the Diamondbacks. I mean, you know, it's really hard looking at the West and seeing, you know, the Dodgers were struggling a little bit. They gave them some room to get in there. And then the Giants, of course, fell apart in typical Kapler fashion, in which led to him losing his job. They've got a lot of really nice pieces. Now, I think that the question for them is then how could they retool for next year? Because every team's going to want to add a bunch of starters. I mean, the Phillies are going to need to do something, right? I mean, yep. You know, even though we're talking about how good they are compared to everybody else. You know, you don't want to, you know, lose Nola if you lose Nola and not replace him. But anyway, my point is that the teams like the Diamondbacks are going to be out there starting, looking for starting pitching, and you know they're going to be the hungry team next year that's going to say, man, if only we had a little bit more ammo here, and I think they're going to be active this off season.
I would be if I were them, because they have some good young talent. They've got some good hitters, you know, and I would, if I was them, I'd want to keep Walker around. I don't know when he's up on a contract. I think
he's got one more year left.
He's got one more year. I would just want to extend him now to keep him away from that 1 year. He's a good player. You know, Carroll, of course, great player. Marte, really good player. I feel like they need a bigger bopper. You know, Tommy Pham right now is like what, batting third for them. Nice player, but you know, he's not in that. You know, you look at the Braves lineup, right? And you got a lot of boppers there. Moreno's a good catcher, Gurriel's a good player. They have some guys who are just good hitters and make contact and smart players, but I feel like if you got Carroll and Walker, you need one more bopper, but of course they're gonna obviously need a starter and some bullpen help too. It would not surprise me at all, Frank, if the Diamondbacks were not in the playoffs next year, because they just don't have that sort of history of being able to build towards something and sustain it.
Well, let's talk about, I did want to bring up a couple things about the Wheeler start. So he removed after only 81 pitches. So is he kind of falling off the shelf quickly? Is that something to worry about for the World Series? It seems like a third time around the lineup, he's been hitting a wall lately. I just curious for your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, this goes back to the question of why he got removed last year against Jordan Alvarez, right? For Alvarado. And it was such a polarizing thing. He was pitching so great, but the statistics tell you that third time around, and it's not just playoffs, right? It's kind of him and Nola throughout the seasons have been those guys that are pretty much good to give you seven at most. And then you want to move on because they get a little bit hittable. And it's weird because it's not like his velocity, it's not like his movement is all that off, but Wheeler has some good natural movement. And when it doesn't happen, then it sort of gets left out there. And obviously he's not a 9,900 guy. So you can catch up to it if that movement goes away a little bit. So I think Topper plays it really well. Limiting that when you get six or seven things out of those guys and you're up ahead, go to your bullpen because you have great arms in your bullpen.
Yeah, well, with all the days off, with all the days off you get during the playoffs, which with a lot of them, more on that in a second, it really does give you the option to just run through your bullpen, right? I mean, I guess the one time that you worry about it is when they play three games in a row in the middle, right? But
yes,
but other than which is a great time for a bullpen game, right, Arizona. But beyond that, I mean, you have the ability to bring them back fresh, coming up. So anyway, I just wanted your thoughts on that. I mean, I think, yeah, if you get six out of them, even though it's only six and there are three to go, good time to use the bullpen there. So I think that's something that I can understand, you know, again, mm-hmm. in light of past debates. So,
right.
All right, then. So
who would have home field, by the way, in the World Series? Does it matter on, let's say the Phillies advance?
If the Phillies face the Astros, it would be home field for the Phillies. If the Phillies face the Rangers, it'll be home field for the Rangers.
And would it be two games, day off, three, no matter what?
Correct.
Okay.
Actually, I tend to prefer, in the World Series, I prefer starting on the road, because if you could take one of those and you come home to the Citizens Bank Park. And so I don't think it's such a bad thing if the Phillies don't have home field, because remember 2008, that's what happened, right? They started out in Tampa yes. Bay and yep. they took one of them and then they came home, took care of business, you know? So yes. I think it's actually a good thing. That's just
after the rain delay, after the longest rain delay in the history of rain delays, man.
But yeah, that would be one thing that I would look forward to is seeing that. Oh, I do want to ask though, because when you look at the schedule, so if let's say Phillies do take care of business quickly and then take games three and four, and if they don't, they have Zach Wheeler in game five. So you're feeling kind of good about that. If there is no game five, if there's no game six, That means the series ends on Friday night tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
The World Series is not until the following Friday.
Yep.
That's a long layoff. Are you worried about that layoff?
Well, I sort of hope it happens, and then, you know, the Phillies like have a really awesome game one against either Houston or Texas, so we can put the rest like the whole layoffs are killer, and that's why the Braves lost and everything like that. Everybody has to deal with it at some point or another, and I guess I'd be concerned, but I'm not quite sure how long that Houston Texas series is going to go either. I mean, even with Houston winning the other night, it's like they took this huge lead and Texas kept coming back, and it was a lot closer than you think. And, you know, that series might only go five.
I don't know. I think Houston's bats showed you last night that they're not out of it. So,
definitely.
And I mean, if Scherzer's your game three starter, you know, we'll see what they do in game four. But
that's
a great point
because they're going bullpen. Yeah. I know. It's crazy.
Blows my mind that this is the way that people are handling playoff games. So, yeah. So, Andrew Haney, who used to be a prospect and hung around in Major League Baseball. Because let's face it, if you could pitch okay, you hang around. But the former top prospect for, I guess, who did he come up with it?
Angels, right?
Well, he was with the Angels, but he was with the Dodgers. He was with the Marlins.
I'm trying
to keep track of where he came from originally. I guess he came originally from Miami, but was a top prospect. He's going to get the ball first, but he has not been starting this postseason. So this is going to be, I think this is the opportunity for the Astros to level it up today. I can see, I actually disagree with you. I think this series could go six or seven.
It could. I've forgotten briefly that the Texas had to have another bullpen game, but I think Texas has been really scrappy. I mean, you know, even when they were down against the Astros, they were still hitting in the sixth, seventh, eighth inning. Young hit homers twice. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I do agree that if Houston is able to win game four, then I can see this becoming a seven gamer.
Yeah, Jose Urquidy will take the ball tonight for the Astros, although, you know, he kind of struggled down the stretch, and I really on 2023 as a whole. I mean, he was not the pitcher he was in 2022. He had 5.29 ERA this past season, and he's only gotten the ball once in the postseason so far. So I don't know, Jeff. This is going to be an interesting. I'm sure I'll stay up and watch it, but this will be an interesting ALCS too. I think if the Houston Astros level it up today, man, and I don't know. They could wear themselves out battling each other, and then Phillies will be nice and rested. But again, if you're worried about the rest, right? Because didn't we learn rest is bad now, right?
Yeah.
The Braves are
rest terrible. Can't have rest, even though it gives you a great opportunity to set up your pitching staff the way you.
Although
have.
Here's the thing though. Even if they went Wheeler and Nolan 5 and 6, they still because there's a couple days off. There's still enough time for them to come back and pitch. Pitch two games each in the World Series. So
right,
I think the pitching
right.
will be set up just fine. So my only question would be if you're worried about that.
No, the advantage is if you don't have to play that, then you get those guys lined up and they don't have that extra start underneath them. So they're extra fresh. So those guys really perform well when they have more rest. So I'd be thrilled with it. Hey, I wanted to ask you, game one, the 5-3 win, the Phillies. Oh, were you surprised? We talked about it a little bit, but they were warming up Hoffman, right, after Wheeler was going to come out, and instead they went with Sir Anthony. And I was a little surprised by that. Do you think that the Braves game, giving up the home run to Riley, kind of changed Topper's view, or do you think that they're still just trying to get Sir Anthony to be the Sir Anthony of old? I mean, at that point, it was 5-0.
I think I have the answer. I think that Topper prefers to bring in Hoffman to put out a fire and prefers to give Sir Anthony a clean inning. So Hoffman was not needed to put out a fire. So he sat back down. They gave Dominguez the clean inning. And then later on, they had Hoffman warming in case he needed to put out a fire. So I feel like they trust Hoffman to come in and get a ground ball and get them out of a mess.
Right.
I don't think they would like to put Dominguez into a situation with runners on, so that they would prefer to give him the clean inning, because as we've seen, his command's a little all over the place still.
Yeah. And it really is. Yeah.
If they're not getting their, I'd shy away from Dominguez if it was a high leverage situation.
Right.
In fact, he could, I mean, I understand why they pitched Kuchering at the end of game two and then Strom at the end of game two, because they just wanted to get them work and get them used to pitching more because there was an off day, because they want to use those guys. But, you know, if there's any other 10 nothing games, how about you let him pitch some and try to pitch some of this?
Right.
I mean, not that you want to embarrass the Diamondbacks too much, but I mean, who knows? So maybe there'll be an opportunity to get them into games. But I don't like what I see out of Dominguez. I just think his command is just way off. I don't think it's coming back this postseason all of a sudden.
No.
I mean, if you're stuck, like I saw him close out a game where he loaded the bases towards the end of the season. I can't remember when it was exactly, but at the end of the day, like, he inspires a lot of swings and misses. So a lot of people get themselves out against him when he's wild. True. So, I mean, I would keep him in the back, but I don't know. He's making me a little too nervous, Jeff.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I feel like when he's on, he's very confident, right? And then you see the emotion and, you know, he walks the leadoff batter, which you should never freaking do. I get it's Christian Walker. And then you get the ground ball back to you and you throw it 5 miles wide of Trey Turner. And I think man, that was an easy throw right there. The guy puts himself in trouble more than anything. And to me, that just signaled that he's fighting himself all over the place. Yeah. Now, his pitching, his fielding, his composure. And I don't want that in a high leverage situation.
No, I think they need to do their best to shy away. I understand you probably can't at all times, but yeah, if it wasn't for Gabe Moreno throwing that ball down the first base line, I mean, I think that made you feel better, because then they each contributed to their own undoing a little bit. But
I don't know. Maybe I would have went Kuchering there if I didn't want to use Hoffman. But it seems like they're still also very choosy and selective in the spots with him too. So
I would not hesitate. I would prefer, if I'm going to use Kuchering, to do it at the end of the lineup, if there's an opportunity. But I think seeing him pitch again yesterday was a way of, on Tuesday, was a way of saying, hey, let's make sure he has what we think he has, because we might need him later.
Yeah, good point.
So. All right, Jeff. Well, we'll see him play through these two games, and then I suppose we should reconvene and talk some more. Whether they win these two or not, I'm feeling like the Phillies have this. You know, of course they have to play the games. Like, they shouldn't be too presumptuous, but
right.
I think this heavily leans Phillies, and I think we're going to be seeing Phillies play to the last game of the year.
Gonna be a great thing. I expect it to be a great thing, and I can't wait to do the next pod with you and see what we got to say.
Well, enjoy the Phillies, enjoy the ALCS, because I think that bears some watching too. But
it's been fun. Yeah,
it's been fun. There'll be a lot of this is just so nice that there's all this baseball still happening, right? You know, so gosh, when we we've come a long way, Jeff.
We really have. It's a nice bridge, man, right? To the second half of the NFL season. And then you wake up and you're like, oh, February 14th. Like, pitchers and catchers are reporting in like a month. This is great.
Yeah. And I love that too. So, all right, Jeff. So this has been the Powder Blue Podcast. Jeff Mosher, Frank Close. We'll be in touch.